Hello.
I'm loving your intro. Your intro is the best. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, hello and welcome to another episode of Doing the Leads with myself, Jermaine Beckford, and this legend over here,
Matthew Lewis. That's
boom.
Me.
The way you start, it kills me every time, because you just start off by, it's like you don't know what you're going to say or what's coming next. It's like, hello. I'm buzzing off it. Listen, little things like that help to make a rubbish week better.
It's episode 10 and I still don't have any idea what I'm doing.
That oh makes one God. Of us.
Well, actually, the main reason is because I spent the weekend getting furiously drunk after Saturday morning.
What happened on Saturday morning?
Well, it was Saturday afternoon for you lot, but for me, it was a 4-1 loss to Crystal Palace happened, mate.
It was painful.
And so that was miserable, and I spent the weekend sort of trying to drink that away.
How'd you get on? Okay.
And Monday, yet a little too good, and now it's Monday, and I'm still trying to get over it. That's why I don't know what I'm doing. What does it say? Intro. Matt in DC.
Oh, running order. I'm not bothering with the running order. Let's just you and me sit down and have a general chin wag about life.
All right.
Obviously, we've got to touch on the whole Leeds United thing, which was massively painful. You know that. I know that. Everybody listening knows it. That's twice now in a week that we've been tucked in 4-1.
I don't like
it. What do you reckon? Do you reckon we're getting figured out a little bit?
I don't want to jump to any conclusions because, truthfully, no word of a lie, before this season started, I was discussing a little bit with my brother and a few other people about what we thought we could get out of this season. And a few of the fans of Premier League clubs had sort of looked at us and said, you know what? I think you could do really well against your Liverpools, Man Cities, Arsenals, etc.
The bigger teams who come out and attack
exactly.
you.
But they did predict, and we kind of accepted it, that we might struggle against. And the two names that came up, Leicester, Crystal Palace, they were exactly the kind of teams that went, we might struggle against those. And I guess that's...
And rightly so. Rightly so. Just because of the way they attack, the way they set up and attack. We're under no illusions. Leicester City have the best centre-forward for counter-attacking football.
Right.
Possibly in the world. In Jamie Vardy.
And the team is set up around that, around him.
Perfectly.
Right.
Perfectly for the counter-attack. Yeah. They had Barnes playing. They had Maddison came off the bench, who absolutely changed the game, by the way. He was incredible when he came on. Tielemans as well, in holding midfield. He was brilliant. Listen, the way they played was excellent. It was perfect for playing against us, which is painful to say. That being said, it's something that I would have hoped that we'd figured out after the Wolves game where we got hit on the counter-attack.
I think that, I said it last week that I thought they were great. They were better than us, deserved to win. I thought 4-1 flattered them, personally.
Absolutely.
And I think that if 4-1 flattered Leicester, then 4-1 for Crystal Palace was... They will never play like that again and get a 4-1 win. I mean, we'll go into the actual... We'll deep dive into the game and talk about VAR decisions and crazy deflections and all the rest of it. But, you know, Leeds weren't at the races. That's admitted. You know, we our passing wasn't what it should have been, and we were a bit riled. I mean, they pressed quite well. But 4-1 was ridiculous, wasn't it? We did not deserve to be on the end of a 4-1 scoreline.
Nah, no chance. No chance. Especially the way we attacked the game, approached the game.
Yeah.
We took it to them, went toe-to-toe with them. And don't forget, these guys are established Premier League football teams now as well, you know. And for us to dominate possession in both games as we did, create as many chances as we did in both games, but not to have put them away.
Yeah.
There's definitely positives to be taken from both games, don't get me wrong for a second. However, there's massive lessons to be learned, and those lessons need to be learned immediately. Otherwise, we're going to be on the end of another couple of drummings, and I don't think it's right.
I mean, I do accept that, you know, Bielsa has this attitude that losing 2-1 is the same as losing 4-1 and you might as well go for it. And I'm not against that premise.
I love that. I love that as a striker.
Right.
Best form of defence is attack.
Right.
And mindset-wise, I think he thinks similar to myself, or I think similar to him, in terms of I'm not defending, because if I'm defending, that means I'm attracting the forwards to come and attack, which is the last thing you want to do, especially with the quality that are in the Premier League.
I certainly think that in playing in that style, whilst I don't disagree with that attitude, it's certainly that you need the players that can do that, and to have key injuries to positions, and then to have their replacements also either pick up injuries or be dropped, and we'll talk about that. That's difficult to take that. I mean, Rodrigo, I think in the last two games has proved that he's worth 27 million quid by basically not having him. We look at a different team. Obviously, both these games could have done with Calvin Phillips desperately.
Oh, mate, 100%.
And then we see, you know, the replacements coming in, Shaq getting an injury, and obviously Pablo having a bit of a bust up with the gaffer. So it's not, you know, you say we can accept the, you know, taking injuries across the field is fine, but when you get injuries and then injuries to the replacements for those injuries, that's always going to be hard, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't write that. You know, things like that happen, but they don't happen that often, so you don't really give it a second thought.
Yeah.
Shaq's is, these things happen.
Yeah.
Pablo is pure frustration more so than anything, I think. And listen, as you touched on briefly, Rodrigo, mate, this guy is amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how much went through him until, as you mentioned, that Leicester game where we just missed that creativity, the ball sticking in that number 10 role. And my frustration is that we didn't get him sooner, if I'm honest. But I desperately can't wait for him to come back. He'll be back, fortunately, straight after the international break. So he would have only missed that one, which is good. Calvin Phillips, man.
Big loss.
I feel for him. I feel for Stroik, who was filling in for him. I feel for the boys at the back, Cork and Coops, because they didn't have that same player that's sitting in front of them, protecting them, the protector.
Yeah.
You know, whenever the opposition are attacking, when they're on a counter-attack, Calvin drops back and he's in the middle of the two centre halves, and he makes it into a firm three, which is it's brilliant. Yeah. And that's what we've been lacking. That's what we've been missing. I'm desperate for him to come back, because we just look solid when he's there. We look resolute. We look like we've got an understanding of where everybody's supposed to be.
And they look a little
breaks up play
unsettled without him, don't they, really? Like a bit they don't quite know whose job it is to pick up certain players. And I mean, we saw it with Coops, bit of ball watching, just not quite sure without Phillips there whose job it is.
Yeah, again, he's another leader, and he's a leader that's missing. You know, sometimes you need the core. You need the core of your team. So your goalkeeper, your centre-half, one of your centre-halves or both, a centre midfield player and a centre-forward, just one in each of those positions. That's a leader. That's captain material. And then they can dictate to those players that are immediately around them, the fullbacks, the wingers, dictate to those guys exactly where to be, what to do. And because of the experience and because of the respect that everybody has for the leaders in the group, the captains, so to speak, you don't answer back. You don't second guess their decisions. You know, and that's something that I can see firsthand is going on.
Mm.
And it's frustrating because every single one of them are capable of doing the right thing at the right time, but it seems like they just need that extra confidence, that extra boost from somebody, just to say to them, listen, relax, calm it down, slow it down a little bit. We're in possession of the game. We're in control of the game. Let's slow it down. Let's dictate play now. Let's make them work. Let's get the ball moving rather than us just playing at 100 miles an hour constantly.
We couldn't quite string those passes together consistently enough to get that confidence, could we? I felt like just what you're talking about, Rodrigo, there is that the ball just sticks to him. He's just got that. He's got that Premier League ability in the middle where he doesn't look fazed by the lack of space, the pressure. He just looks like he can find space and he just looks comfortable. And I thought we lacked that a little bit. A couple of our passing movements were that the ball was a yard or two short, or it went over someone's head, or it just wasn't quite playing. And I reckon if we could have strung one or two together, we might have got a bit more confidence and got into it. And we just couldn't really manage to do that. And that kind of carried on for the whole game, really.
Listen, I'm not making excuses because both teams had to deal with the same situations, but the pitch, the weather were, oh man, after the first 5 minutes of the game, the pitch started breaking up.
Right.
And the way that we played, the hard press, the closing down quickly, the high intensity, closing down and running with the ball, without the ball. When you're trying to slow down, when the pitch is breaking up, you're kind of cautious as to get to the player too quickly, yeah, and then have to slam on your brakes and then change direction because you know the grass isn't going to hold up and you're going to slip. So I think because of that, we were maybe half a yard off it. Again, I'm not making excuses because Leicester played the perfect game. They had the perfect game plan to play against us with the high press. But hopefully, after the international break, after once the boys get back from wherever they are in the world, the pitch would have been able to knit itself together a little bit more, make it a little bit firmer. And then hopefully, like I said, we'll be able to jump on it and push forward. But painful to watch.
And it was painful to watch. And I want to, you know, we've talked about all that went wrong and we've not pulled punches there. But I also want to talk about what sort of gave the illusion of going right until it was taken away from us. But I don't think that it's crisis talks moment yet, because that game, that Palace game was actually decided, you know, it was on a knife edge. And you talk about these fine margins, and you can say ifs and buts, whatever. If Bamford's first goal, which is a goal, I don't even want to talk about the VAR, it's a goal. There's no discussion to be had. It was a goal.
Yeah.
If that's allowed to stand, and then the free kick that's been given down the other end for their goal.
That was a great free kick, by the way.
Great free kick. Shouldn't have been a free kick, but it's a great goal.
Exactly.
And I'm just like, you talk about these fine margins. I know I don't want to be a bitter and say, oh, well, if it had gone this way. But, you know, the simple fact is, if Bamford's goal goes in and it's one each, that game goes a very different way. And and the simple fact is, it was a goal. So I don't want to sit here and say, oh, Leeds are in trouble, we need to start working this out. Because actually, we was robbed. I hate saying shit like that, but we really were in that game, and it was not a 4-1 game.
What you have to realise, we're 5 points off the European spots right now and 7 points away from the relegation zone. So we're closer to being in Europe than we are to getting relegated. Right. How's that for your glass half full?
Absolutely. Well, it's amazing, isn't it? Because we forget, like, we were all talking, you know, on the first week about how we just want to stay up, we'll take 17th place. And now we're frustrated that we're not in the top half. But I just, again, I don't want to talk about the decision itself, but how frustrated would you have been as a striker who's obviously got so much pressure on you, particularly Leicester game, the misses that he had in the Leicester game, to have scored a belting goal like that and have it chalked off?
Oh, I'd be fuming. Absolutely fuming. Listen, Patrick Bamford is so sensible in his approach to the interview after the game. Did you hear
his interview? I was so infuriated. I couldn't watch anything.
So imagine being the person that had that goal chalked off, and then they throw a camera in front of your face, and then you've got people asking you questions about it. He handled himself incredibly well. Now, myself, I get emotional quite quickly, especially when I'm in a situation where the adrenaline's still really high, still pumping through your body. You still got the frustration. Plus, you've just been on the end of a 4-1 defeat to a team that, all right, if you lose, but it was a much tighter game than the 4-1 made it seem like. He handled himself incredibly. He said, I don't understand what the offside rule is anymore. You have to explain it to me because there was no way I was offside. Me now, I would have lost my mind. I would have been storming out of the play. I would have been thinking of taking my boots off and throwing it at the cameraman. Oh mate, honestly, I couldn't believe it. Watching it back multiple times, I was covering it for BBC Final Score. So watching it on there and then having the replays playing in front of me as well from multiple angles and seeing which part of Pat's body was offside, it's embarrassing. He's pointing to where he wants the ball to go. The referee, absolute nonsense.
I want to talk about, you know, we want to protect referees from X or whatever. But managers have to come and explain results. Players have to come out and explain mistakes. Why is a referee like Mike Dean there, who's protected from the crowd, protected from pressure, he's up in a room somewhere and he's got that so wrong, why is he not having to come out and say, either A, here's why I disallowed it, what, or B, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. I 100% agree with you. Absolutely. Referees, they're so protected. It's like referees are almost like goalkeepers. So if a goalkeeper makes a blunder, a mistake, you don't see him given an interview after many games. You know, right. he gets the benefit of the doubt. Everybody knows he's made a mistake. It just gets brushed under the carpet and, you know, it's on to the next one. Referees are the same. Referees fall into the same category as goalkeepers in the sense that they're protected. They're a protected breed, which is frustrating, especially for players and ultimately for fans and managers as well, when all we want is a fair discussion as to what happened, right, why you gave that decision, and whether you understand if you were in the right or wrong. For me, as a player, if a referee came out and he said in the press, listen, I made a mistake. At the time, it looked like it was offside. Having had the benefit of the doubt to watch it afterwards, I understand I was wrong. I apologize for that. People would still be frustrated, don't get me wrong, for a second, but they would say, cool.
Right.
I appreciate him. I respect him because he's had the decency, yep, and the honesty to stand up and just appreciate that he's made
just
a mistake.
A bit of accountability at the end of the day.
Just a little bit. We're not asking them to throw themselves under the bus and say I shouldn't be refereeing, right, or anything like that. Just understand from a different perspective. If the shoe was on the other foot, how would that make you feel? You know, as a player, I would still be annoyed, don't get me wrong, yeah, but I would understand and I would appreciate and I would accept the apology.
Because it gives the illusion that they don't give a shit. They're like, we've made this awful decision. We don't have to explain ourselves to you.
Right, listen to this. So I'm not going to name names, but I was playing in a game, in a Premier League game for Everton, and I had a referee who was a bit of a moron. I'll be honest with you, he was a bit of an egg. So like, I was going shoulder to shoulder with somebody. Gave him a little bit, he gave me a little bit. And then there was a 50-50 challenge. I got in front of the guy that was defending. He smashed me, caught my ankle. My ankle blew up like a balloon. It was horrible. Referee didn't even give a free kick. But it wasn't Bex just about got there an inch before him. I got there and then a yard later, bang, I got wiped out. So I got up off the floor. Said to the referee, how is that not a foul? And he said, listen, mate, I'll be honest with you. I ain't got time for this. I'm not putting on any more than 2 minutes injury time because I've got to get in my Porsche and go home. That's what the referee said to me on the pitch.
Brilliant.
On the pitch.
Brilliant.
So I said, right, okay, cool.
Brilliant. That's cool. That's Premier League standard that you want, isn't it? Best league in the world.
Yeah. Cheers for your understanding, ref.
I just think that, again...
Don't get me wrong. Not all referees are like that. Don't get me wrong. Most of them are all right, but you do have one or two that are just... Yeah.
And I completely understand that it's a very difficult job. You're out there in the middle, particularly when fans are back in the stadium. It's a difficult job, and the abuse that they get and all the rest of it, they should be protected for as a degree. But I think that abuse comes down, again... If they're not seen as some kind of arbitrator that is judge, jury, executioner, their way or the highway, and they don't answer to anyone, which is kind of how it feels. Like,
that's exactly how it feels.
No one's expecting them to be right 100% of the time. They're really not. All we just want is a little accountability where they come out and they go, you know what, that frustration you're feeling, you're right to feel that, I'm sorry. And then we can move on. But right now, we're all sitting here going, we're frustrated, but it's like, are we even right about this? Or are we all going mad? Like, are we all going completely insane? Because that is a goal every day of the week. I said I wasn't going to talk about the decision.
100%.
But I'm going to talk about it because...
Here he is.
I've looked at the images. I've looked at the frigging... They're all, oh, well, they're now saying that the T-shirt line is the line. I don't know why that is.
Right, let me stop you there. With the T-shirt line, if the ball hits your T-shirt line, like you can see where my T-shirt is, right? Mid-bicep, yeah? My biceps are bulging, by the way.
I can see it.
Took my mid-bicep. These things happen. You're not the first. You won't be the last. If the ball hit my arm where my T-shirt ends, it's handball.
It's a handball. Right, it's a handball.
So how on earth is that offside if you can't score with that part of the body?
Also, it's ridiculous. Like, even though that is absolutely true, and you're right, that's not where the line was by his elbow. It was nowhere near his T-shirt line. It was by his elbow.
Exactly. So what I want to see the referee come out and say, this is why I gave it. This is the part of his body that was offside and this is why I gave it. Even if we don't agree with you, we can respect you because you've stood by your decision.
Right.
That's all I'm after. Yeah, that's all we're after. We just want you to stand by your decision.
Also, if we're going to go into the actual, you know, the technicalities of this, the referee gave a goal. Okay, and so if Mike Dean has to have, he wants to disallow that goal, he has to have seen, was it clear and obvious?
There's no chance that was clear.
Is that clear and obvious?
Matter of fact, it was clear and obvious. It was a clear and obvious goal.
Right.
That's what exactly. It was. That's your clear and obvious right there.
Exactly. Completely frustrating. Mate. And that's as much time as I want to spend on that shit decision. But carrying on with that, because I'm talking about these fine margins. Bamford's goal disallowed, the free kick that shouldn't have been a free kick that results in a goal, and then that complete freak deflection for their third goal. Like, talk about a game where everything that could have gone wrong actually went wrong. And I know that's football and it is what it is, because on paper it's a 4-1 loss, but it's not, is it? I mean,
yeah, exactly. But this is where he's got to look at the positives from it, and I know we touched on it before that we lost 4-1, don't get me wrong, but you look at the way we dominated play, we dictated play,
yeah.
We created a lot of opportunities. Even without multiple of our regular first teamers in there, we still went toe-to-toe with Crystal Palace, who under Roy Hodgson at Selhurst Park as well, is a difficult place to go and a team to play against. So we have to look at it from that perspective. We need to learn lessons on when we go forward. I don't think we need to commit so many players forward in the counter into our attacks. But that being said, it's kind of our DNA. It's kind of how we do things. You look at the way we dictated play in the middle of the field. We showed a lot of energy. Listen, we have the same conversation about the same thing every week. The way we play is excellent. It's excellent. But it's little mistakes and refereeing decisions that seem to be going against us. We're not getting battered on the field. We're not getting outplayed or outran or, you know, nobody's taken a game to us and we've held our hands up and said, oof, I'll tell you what, that was a lesson in how to play football. No, we haven't had that. So I think there's still many positives to be taken.
It is, I guess, a back down to earth a little bit. I mean, we've not been obviously defeated 4-1 for a long time. Off the back of the last time, we ended up winning like, was it 5-6 in a row, whatever, after we got beat by West Brom. A couple of years ago.
Yeah, they're doing well as well, aren't they?
Yeah, very well. So to lose two in a row, it's not something that we are very used to. Or haven't been for, you know, 2.5 years now. And it's been a little tough to take, hasn't it? But as we said, like, there are so many positives. It sounds ridiculous after losing 8-2 over 2 weeks, but many positives.
Look at who we lost to. Look at the two teams we lost to. The four teams, actually. Wolves. They finished seventh the last two seasons in a row, play unbelievable football. They got a flipping Portuguese team. Leicester, who are one of the best counter-attacking teams in world football. Liverpool, toe-to-toe with the European and the Premier League champions, 4-3. And
Palace. Palace, sorry. It's a forgettable game already. We're over it.
Yeah, easy, just like that. But those they're not bad games to lose, and they're not bad teams to lose against. They're bad games to lose, don't get me wrong, all of them are, but if you're going to lose to anyone, you probably pick most of those and Palace at theirs.
Let's just think about, you know, if we're going to rein in our expectations again, which we all have to remember what we suggested at the start of the season. If it comes down to beating the teams that are going to be around us come the end of the season, we're already doing that. Like, these teams that we're talking about here, your Leicesters, your Liverpools, even Palace, they're probably going to be top half. And so when you look at the teams around us, Sheffield United, Fulham, the sort of the teams that we've beaten this
West
season.
West Brom, Burnley, Brighton, they're down there.
They're the teams we
Manchester United.
They're the teams we have to beat, right? They're the teams we have to be beating. And I still feel, you know, once we get players back and whatever, I still feel quite confident in that. And seeing some of their games, like, I don't want to slag anyone off too much, but I've watched some of those games at the bottom half of the table. They've been bad, haven't they?
They've been poor.
Yeah,
absolutely poor. And that's something that, like, ultimately, you briefly touched on it a moment ago. Our goal at the beginning of the season was survival. First and foremost, it has to be survival. It has to be that magic 40-point mark. Once we reach that, like, we're a quarter of the way there now. Once we reach that, then we can look at progressing from there, pushing forward and seeing where we could end up. I still stand by it. I still think we'll finish in the top half. I do. And then we'll see what happens from there. This has been one of those crazy seasons. crazy season. Like, we are, I'll tell you what, how about this for food for thought? We're on 10 points now after 8 games. When Leicester City won the Premier League in 2015-2016 season, they were on 15 points at this stage of the season.
Right.
So they're only 5 points ahead of us when they won the Premier League season. Now, I'm not saying that's what we're going to do. And I'm not saying necessarily that, I think they finished on 81 points that season. I'm not saying that's going to be enough to win the title this season.
Right.
But I'm saying Leicester City did it in the middle of Manchester City, Liverpool, Chelsea, absolutely dominating the Premier League season. Arsenal as well. They were right up there. So there's a possibility that the impossible could become possible.
We'll probably runners up then, is what you're saying. Not quite enough.
I don't mind
that. Runners up. All right.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, just fall a little bit short. Leave a little bit of room to improve next season.
you might have more to say about Palace. I just want to say one last thing, because, you know, we talked about his goal being taken off, but angry Bamford, that second goal was just class.
Oh, I love it.
Do we need to like employ someone to just piss him off before the game starts? I mean, that hat trick at Villa and this game, like,
I think the referees are doing a good job of that at the moment, aren't they?
I just feel that angry Bamford is golden boot winner. If we get Hulk Bamford in every game, we're gonna.
There might be a cheeky England call up. I'm hearing as well.
Mate,
who knows?
I mean, if he keeps finishing like that, I mean, again, like he's so hit and miss in the Leicester game, and then this game, it's just like chalk and cheese. But when he's on, he's
only
on.
Got a couple of players above him in the Premier League top scorer charts at the moment as well. So take that into account, into consideration, and mate, it's looking good for the angry bat. Angry Pat.
Yeah.
But the way he took that goal was amazing. Like, the run, it's the same combo again. It's Clichy.
Yeah.
Little flick on. Pat taking it on the chest and then just absolutely flung his laces right through the bottom corner. Keeper had absolutely no chance. But it's the understanding and awareness from Pat to know when Matt's got the ball, just look for him. Just look and anticipate him finding you. It's almost like Spurs with Kane and Son. You know, there's almost a telepathy kind of thing going on. They understand each other. They know that they trust each other with the ball. If one of them makes a run, the other one's going to find him. It works.
I just think
it works.
He's so instinctual as a finisher that actually when he has more time, that's when I think he's not going to score this. But when he just hits it, he knows how to finish when he just hits it.
And that's something that myself as well, whenever I had time to think about what I wanted to do, I would score 7 times out of 10. But when it was instinct and instinct took over, I'm scoring every time.
That's interesting.
See that? Do you like the confidence?
Yeah,
there?
I do. I do.
if you check the stats, the stats will say something completely different, but it's how I felt. You're much more comfortable and confident when you don't have to think about it. As a centre forward, as a striker, when the ball's in front of you, the goal's in front of you, and the goalkeeper's thinking about which way you're going to go. If you just go bang, instinctive, keeper's not going to have a chance because you don't know where you're going. That's the aim. That's the game.
I've just got to say, while he's exuding all this confidence, just behind his head is a giant, and I mean giant, picture of Jermaine celebrating a goal. It's the Old Trafford goal, isn't it?
It's the Bristol one.
Oh, that's the Bristol Rovers one, is it?
Yeah.
Right, okay, very good.
The Old Trafford one's over there.
can you turn and show us it?
No, in the other room.
Oh, right,
in the other room. I don't have all of them in the same room. That would just be weird. shrine to myself. Do you honestly think my missus would let me get away with that?
Yeah.
No chance.
Oh, man. Well, that's Bex's confidence and his house shrine to chat out the way. That was third on the running order. We got that out of the way. So that's Palace. Moving on, international break. I know we've got Arsenal up next, but that's like a million years away.
It's a while away. Yeah, we don't need to worry about that just yet. They lost as well, so that'll be a good game for us going into and taking into account. Do you know what? It's just dawned on me. We played them the beginning of this year. And it seems like an age ago. It was the beginning of this year.
Is that
where we went over to the Emirates?
That was January this year.
How crazy! That was January this year. How crazy was that?
That is mad.
And
I can't believe that.
Absolutely dominated them
that
as well.
Feels
first
like,
half, we put them in their place.
That feels like 2 seasons ago.
It's crazy, right?
Wow.
That's just the crazy times that we're living.
Yeah.
Battered them first half, We gave it to them the second half. We let them have it because we had bigger fish to fry, so to speak.
Didn't want
to
be in it.
Nah, I didn't need to be in it then. We'll crack on this season.
Not interested. It was the best thing, which give them a school in, then say, look, have your little 1-0. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. Obviously, Bielsa and the boys are looking forward to that as well. Yeah. Mikel Arteta and his boys will be looking to bounce back from a naughty defeat.
We'll certainly have a more in-depth preview of that in a week or so. In the meantime, we are going to have a special guest joining us over the next couple of weeks. Hopefully a few.
We are indeed.
Certainly one that's quite special. Someone very close to your heart, I'm sure, Bex, as well as many Leeds fans, but particularly yourself. Do you want to introduce?
We will be having none other than Mr. Simon Grayson. What a ledge.
Absolutely.
Absolute ledge. The guy is incredible. I love working with this guy. I've loved working with this guy. I've loved just being in his presence, and he's just a brilliant human being. Somebody that's given me an opportunity in multiple different clubs to play football. And he's based the team around myself, and he's just helped me with lots of different situations. And you know, I've also helped him get a couple of promotions. So, you know, the feeling, I'm sure, is mutual.
It's always
we'll
nice.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we will find out, won't we? Yeah. But it's always nice to have, you know, particularly someone who is ingrained in the club, you know, getting promotion and Old Trafford and all that, but a Leeds fan as well. It's always nice when it happens that way. So I'm really looking forward to chatting to him about what it all meant to him at that time, and actually what it's meant to him since he's left. And I'm sure he's still had an eye on the club. I'm sure you've chatted to him about it. So
yeah, he definitely does.
In the meantime, guys, send in your own questions as well. Not just for Bex and myself, but maybe throw some in for Simon as well, and we can try and put them to him if you've got any. Keep sending in your reviews as well. They're much appreciated. We do read them. So don't be mean.
Do you know what? To be fair, they've been amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we've got some really good people that are listening and following us. And do you know what might be interesting actually?
Oh God, go on.
Maybe one day we'll do a little competition, and possibly a competition winner. How about we get them on the show?
Oh, okay. This is...
as a one-off. That might be interesting, right?
Bex hasn't run this by anyone involved, by the way. He's just come out He's just come out with this live on the record. I think that'd be a good idea. I can think behind these black screens, we've got our two producers on here who are probably now going, what the hell?
Pulling out their hair in their grandma's basement.
I've just got a text saying he's gone rogue. What's he talking about?
That's not on script.
But no, I don't think that's a bad idea. We should look into doing that. I don't know how they go. Yeah, that's up to you guys to sort out. Bex just drops the bomb and then walks away.
Well, drop us your questions, and later on in the season, whichever way we want to do it, we'll have a discussion about how we'll make it work, and we'll go from there, I guess.
And genuinely,
hey, it could be a great idea.
I think it's a great idea, especially in the time of, you know, COVID and second lockdowns and all the rest of it. I think it's a great idea, and it'll keep it fresh. And you know, ultimately our aim is to one day take it on the road and do some stuff actually with fans, maybe at Elland Road or whatever. But you know, until we can do that, then yeah, why not? I just want to keep everyone, obviously this is very important, haven't said this before, Bex's goatee is doing very, very well.
It's getting there, yeah, isn't it?
Another week under the belt, and it's looking... Is there a bit of grey in the chin there? A little bit of...
No, it's a gap.
Oh, okay. I thought it looked very refined.
I'm trying to keep it manicured.
No, it's good. It's good.
I don't want it to be a little bit... I don't want it to be too rough.
Right.
This is me not cutting it, not shaving it at all.
No, I think it's good.
I'm getting there slowly.
That's good. I think we have to do an update every week, and our lucky winner of the competition can come on Zoom with us and get a first hand look at the goatee.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a banger.
Get to ask us questions first hand as well.
Yeah, yeah. And that as well. So there we go. That's the end of episode 10, and hopefully the last
double figures.
Hopefully the last defeat that we have to talk about for a while.
At least for a fortnight, anyway.
At least for a fortnight.
So.
Very optimistic.
Right, ladies and gents, boys and girls, thank you very much for tuning in once again to myself, Jermaine Beckford, and this young man,
Matthew Lewis. That's right, that's my name. Bye guys. Tally-ho.
Tally-ho. Doing a Leeds is a Lovely Stuff production, produced by Dave Cribb and Will Wood. Music by Dave Cribb.